Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
My cousin Tino right here.
And Gary LeMaster right here.
Yes, the terrible trio here this morning.
And we don't spend a lot of time, I mean, despite the name Democratic Perspective, doing partisan politics, do we? We don't usually, when we talk about, we usually have our program where we talk about the stupidest things introduced into the state legislature. Yeah. We don't particularly dwell on who's introducing the stupidest things into the state.
Well, what I've always thought, we always cover reason, and reason in today's politics is partisan because there's really only one side that's reasonable.
And we're usually focused on ideas, but we want to talk about our representation here in LD6, Legislative District 6, and we want to focus on one of the most controversial of the three very, very controversial people who represent this area. And you kind of wonder if Republicans really know who they're voting for when they vote for people like Bob Thorpe and Brenda Barton and Chester Crandall. Are they really that extreme? Because we have in our legislative district three of the most extreme members of the Arizona legislature.
Yeah, we do. This is part of why people wonder about Arizona. And so I guess part of, if we're going to announce our objective, like good teachers up front here, we're going to see if the voters of LD6 got what they voted for. Bob Thorpe is an interesting guy. He made national news this week.
Yes, he did. And when we talk about these guys, we're not talking about them personally. If we call Bob Thorpe a whack job, we're talking about his politics, not some of his personal life or something like that. Not that we're going to call him anything like that, right, Mike?
No.
All right. Well, how did Bob Thorpe make national news this week?
Well, Gary, he had some tweets that were rather interesting. So I don't misquote him. What do you got there?
he tweeted on a couple of actually he's closed down his Twitter account.
That's right.
He locked it. And Barbara Barton, Brenda Barton. Locked down her Twitter account too.
Yeah.
He started with the tweet about the rodeo clown. I'm sure most of you have heard about the rodeo clown in Sedalia, Missouri, at the Missouri State Fair, who had put on an Obama mask, and then the announcer had a great deal of fun, yelling, "Who wants to see Obama run down by a bull?" And they kept chanting, kind of firing up the crowd to get the people to cheer on the bulls as they came after the clown. Another rodeo clown came up and played with the lips on the mask. It was quite a racist scene.
So coming from Oklahoma, someday we should talk about, there's very different kinds of racism. I remember when I was working in all places of New York, a woman was ranting against monkeys and chimpanzees, all kinds of racist stuff, a woman I worked with. And then I looked over and saw her in the mail room laughing and sort of backslapping with the black guys who work there. So what's going on? Where is she really a racist, or how do you compare and understand someone who does behavior like that? And I had a friend at the same company, and the guys came to me and said, "How can you go out with lunch with him? They said, "He's a black Muslim. Black Muslims hate white people." And I had to look at him and decide, okay, he's a black Muslim. He told me he was not into that so much anymore. but I had to sort of go with my gut and say, this guy is my friend. I don't care what people say about him. I don't care what ideology is. I can feel that we're friends, and he's been very helpful to me. He's a good friend. So it's very complicated. There's a kind of racism, and it exists in the North as well as the South. That's a racism about the physical features, a hatred of the physical features of the race that you don't like.
When you're ready, I want to
playing with the lips of somebody is a reference to what are perceived as black racial features. It's deliberately racist. It's not illegal, right? I mean, guy is a perfectly constitutional. You can do, but it's not a fun filled afternoon. And go ahead, Mike.
Just looking at this article by Josh Israel, and this is Phoenix New Times reported that on August 8th. Bob Thorpe tweeted that his supposedly outrage that three 15-year-old blacks allegedly assaulted a 13-year-old white boy on a Florida school bus and received less media attention than George Zimmerman received for shooting and killing Trayvon Martin. This is one of the tweets he got
It's a theme on Fox News. Fox News has been pushing it.
And then
what happened? Let's just a second. What happened was that it was one of the three boys who was beating up on the other boy was offered to sell. It's a school for kids who are in jeopardy of dropping out of school, and he offered to sell the kid marijuana, and the kid turned him in to the authorities as offering to sell him marijuana in the boys' restroom, and then the guy and his friends ambushed the kid on the bus. There's no evidence at all it was racially motivated. It's about a possible drug deal and snitching and stuff gone wrong. But it's been blown up by the far right. And it's not just people like Bob Thorpe. It's, you know, this is a theme on Fox News.
And then on Monday, Thorpe accused Attorney General Eric Holder, once again through his Twitter account, of racial bias.
Is Holder soft on crime?
Holder announced his drug sentencing reforms that everybody on both sides of the aisle have been screaming about for several years now, the necessary. So he said, why is Holder soft on crime? Perhaps blacks equal 12 to 13% of the U.S. population but make up 40% of male inmates in our jails or prisons. When called out by a colleague for the divisive accusation, he doubled down, asking, what's Holder's motivation for reversing extremely low crime rates?
So this is a different kind of prejudice than you see in the Sedalia Fair. We have a description from AP of a fellow who was there. He says the crowd went wild. He said he had a sense of fear for himself, his wife, and a Taiwanese student that they brought to the performance. They mentioned the president's name, I don't know, 100 times. It was sickening, I'm quoting him. It was feeling like some kind of Klan rally that you see on TV.
So he did apologize for the Eric Holder tweet. Being soft, this is relating to soft on crime and trying to keep black people out of prisons.
Understand that the crime rate really varies not so much with race, but with poverty.
Well, the thing that's interesting about the crime rate Holder's announcement is that what he's doing is bringing the federal sentencing guidelines into alignment with the states. Over the last several years, the states, many of the states, I think it's like 20 states, have reduced sentencing for drug crimes, for nonviolent drug crimes.
Right. And this has been something in the works. There's a huge disparity in the sentencing, and it's been in the works for a long time. Plus, it's time to begin to think about releasing some nonviolent prisoners. It costs us, so what is it, Mike, 40,000 to 50,000 a year to keep them in jail. Maybe there's better ways to do this. And so when Holder made that move, Bob Thorpe saw black racism. Black racism is a frequent theme of the far right. And it, you know, and the thing is, why would he pick this particular incident in Florida? And the answer is, there's this resentment of black folks and what black folks are getting that runs through Bob Thorpe's thinking.
Well, according to
And you see it in his tweets, and he's apologized for them, but that thinking is still there.
According to Chad Campbell and even Fred Duvall to some extent, all he's doing is following the Tea Party playbook, which is, once again, quoting Campbell, is why the Tea Party has to go. His tweets were simply pages from how the Tea Party deals with issues. Now Thorpe, his quote here is that his tweets were poorly worded and do not reflect what I genuinely wanted to communicate about recent national news stories. Thorpe did not explain what he planned to communicate, however, he just
right.
said that.
I mean,
what
it's racial resentment that's part of Bob Thorpe's politics. That's what I think. That would be my assessment. It's a different kind of race, but it's interesting that they accused Obama of being overly sensitive. Brenda Barton went on and accused Obama of being very sensitive about this rodeo clown incident. They have a petition that the president should defend the rodeo clown. But the president said nothing at all about it. He said zero. There is no public record of anywhere of him saying anything about the incident at all. The only person is a sort of one of the spokesmen for the White House from Missouri. He said, well, this doesn't show my state in the best light. And that's the only thing that the administration so far has even said on the incident. Yet they're playing this for everything it's worth. Obama's too sensitive and so forth and so on. We were just kidding around. Everybody knows what bullying looks like.
Why Thorpe got into trouble initially with the tweet was his tweet was calling the clown crowd pleasing, and you know, wondering why anyone should be offended by this.
Yeah, then we have Perry Beam who said, the crowd just went wild when the masked clown appeared. Created a sense of fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So,
well, we can't blame that on...
You know, not everybody thought it was great fun.
We can't blame that on Thorpe and Barton. That's generally anti-Obama feeling in the crowd. I mean, that was.
The head of the NAACP said, well, this was a hate crime. It should be prosecuted. But that's silly. There's no crime there. This is a deliberately hateful... angry act, but it's not illegal. I mean, you can do this sort of stuff. If that's who you are, go ahead and there's no law against it. It's not racially motivated crime has to be a crime. You beat somebody up, you intimidate them, you burn a cross in front of their yard. You have to do something beyond making fun.
Our LD6 representative, Bob Thorpe, is making a pretty good career out of apologizing. Back in April, he had to apologize. You remember the bulletproof vest incident at the Arizona legislature?
He had a retailer in
He invited all the legislators and down to the basement to get measured for a bulletproof vest.
He's voted against having a bulletproof vest penetrating bullets, right?
Yeah.
No, he hasn't. Yeah. he voted not to restrict, you know, bulletproof penetrating vest.
Because he believes he's protecting the Second Amendment that way. He's got a series of legislation. I haven't looked into it. Maybe Gary has, but he's got a series of legislation in Arizona that he's proposed that he believes will protect the Second Amendment. I don't quite see how denying the first responders wearing bulletproof vests or other people wearing bulletproof vests is somehow going to protect the First Amendment.
Well, you know, it comes from and if you read, you know, Bob Thorpe styles himself as a constitutional writer, and he's written Vanity Press book about the Constitution, which was filled with dozens and dozens of pages of forms, including the Constitution. Anything that doesn't cost any money to pad the thing out.
That's a big topic there. But before we get off of his apologies, don't forget that second apology was tied to Gabby Giffords. The first apology.
Yes.
Back in April, regarding the bulletproof vest, And once again, he received a wave of criticism of sparking the apologies because using this to make money off of his fellow legislators. So then he claimed that he had no connection.
And then what did he do? He sicked basically his constituents on Republicans who were voting in favor of extending Medicaid, and some of the people that he listed, he sent out an email asking his constituents to let him have it, you know, kind of tell him where Bob Thorpe stood, and he got a kind of negative reaction because they ended up getting threatening phone calls and stuff. And then he had to apologize for that. So he's a freshman legislator, but there's a series of, he's probably the most apologizing legislature in Arizona recent history.
As you look into to Thorpe's background, he obviously sees himself, I like to say, he's the Saul Alinsky of the Tea Party movement. He really is, you know, fancies himself as an organizer. And
are we supposed to know who that is?
Yeah, he's the radical that that everyone claims Obama, you know, has patterned himself after.
I see. Okay.
He, you know, his whole book is about constitutional rights, but really he misinterprets the Constitution. I mean, he's the very person, kind of person that Michael Austin, who we had on the show,
a good show by the way. Go listen to the podcast. Excellent show.
He's the very kind of person that Michael Austin wrote his book. You know, that's about the founding fathers. That's not what they meant.
Right.
You know, Thorpe and Crandall and you know, Senator Crandall and Brenda Barton are all fighting this whole Federalist argument all over again.
He supported the seizure by the Arizona government of federal land.
Supported that. They've all three sponsored bills that try to limit the federal government's role in the state of Arizona. They want to take land away from the national parks and the Bureau of Land Management and give it back to Arizona, even though that was a criteria for us becoming a state to begin with. And they, you know, sponsored legislation that would ban the federal government from law enforcement in the state of Arizona from enforcing laws.
Wouldn't a history teacher call this nullification? Is this?
Yes, exactly.
And didn't we, when we had our forum here at the Jewish Community Center here in Sedona, we had a comment from a Tea Party person asking about nullification.
That's right.
And the Democratic legislators we had here that day, I thought, did a great job of answering.
Yeah, I mean, we had Tea Party people come to the event we had, and I made sure we read out some Tea Party questions.
Because, that's right.
You know, let people answer them.
You're so bipartisan.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not, but I think it's good to always answer questions and stuff. Well, let's see.
I do want
He's
to
rated 100% by the Center for Arizona Policy. That's the right-wing religious group. One of the Republican senators resigned a couple of years ago. She said, I just can't take it anymore having these guys dictate our policy. He voted to accept gold and silver as legal tender. Mm-hmm. He voted the Arizona sovereignty over natural resources. We mentioned that. He voted to require the U.S. to give land back to Arizona. That's what Gary was talking about. He voted to exempt ranch dogs from animal cruelty laws. He voted to allow guns in public buildings. He voted to allow businesses to refuse to pay for contraceptive services as part of employee insurance. He's rated A by the NRA. He voted to establish the Arizona Guard. I mean, I could go on and on. He voted to allow Tea Party license plates. He voted to prevent the compliance with the federal environmental protection laws. He voted to prohibit the destruction of firearms used in crimes through buybacks. He voted to prevent maintaining records of firearm purchases. He's rated zero by the Sierra Club, and so forth and so on. And Gary, and, I mean, you know, he's a member of the far right. I wonder if if his constituents really understand that he's not an ordinary Republican. In fact, none of our representatives from this areas are, I think people are voting Republican ticket without looking at the real policies of some of these guys.
I'd really recommend that people like Thorpe and Barton and Crandall actually read Michael Austin's book, because it is so apparent to me that we're fighting. What they believe the Constitution says is actually in the Articles of Confederation that the Constitution replaced. And if you look at Thorpe's book, it's kind of based around the 10th Amendment. You know, it all kind of focuses on that.
These are called tenthers. Read out the 10th Amendment here.
The 10th Amendment is quite short, so I'll read it. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Well, that actually gives the federal government a whole lot of leeway, because other parts of the Constitution give it great, great powers. This was the major argument of the Constitutional Convention. That you had one side that wanted to retain the Articles of Confederation, which basically gave all the powers to the state, and then you had another side that wanted to have a strong federal government. The Federalists won out, yet the Tea Party and people like Thorpe are still fighting this battle, and they still, what they really call the Constitution, I think, is more accurately portrayed by the Articles of Confederation.
And what Michael Austin called is proof texting. In other words, going through the Constitution, ignoring the concepts, and ignoring the context of the wording, and going to ideas, selectively picking out ideas. And that's what the far right does. And if you go to look at Bob Thorpe's book, and we're giving it a lot of publicity, I mean, he's got a whole list of right-wing websites and a whole list of right-wing legal things that try to justify this position.
And he takes quotes from the, in terms of proof texting that you mentioned, he takes quotes from the founders. And I think that it really comes across that he's less of an ideologue than he is, has less of an ideology than he has a mythology of the founding fathers. He takes things that are convenient to his, side of the argument from the founders and builds them up as being, almost biblical.
Right. He has an oath that has a biblical sounding oath in the book that he wants everyone to take. A variation on what public officials take, but done with a right-wing tinge to it. He wanted to require that students in the Arizona school system sign an oath to the Constitution before they could graduate. What was it, Ben Franklin? You're going to proof text Ben Franklin. Oaths are the last resorts of scoundrels. And I think all this stuff is just alienating the kids. It's making the love of the country and the respect for the Constitution into a kind of cult, and then a kind of enforced cult. You're forced to do this. You're forced to do that. And this is by a fellow who claims to be an absolutist about the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And yet, when he comes to his things that interests him, he's ready to enforce his views on other people, his version of what should happen.
And what's this guy do? He's a builder?
It's very unclear. You look at the bio, it's very, I don't know. The answer is, I don't want to go there, Mike, because I look at it and the bio is very abstract in significant places. For instance, it says he graduated from University of California. Doesn't say what or where.
A degree in ergonomics. He also worked for Price Waterhouse as a as an accountant, and he worked for Disney for a period of time, and then his one of his hobbies is he calls himself a rocket scientist, but his hobby is building
small rockets. Interesting guy. He's got it, you know. And we're not talking about him so much personally as what he brings to the table politically in Arizona is more extremism, more cultism, and what did you call it, Gary? You called it
mythology. Yep.
It's a cult like.
I don't know who he dates, but you know, or what, you know, what he drives. I just would like to know how he supports himself and what he calls himself. And I don't think we're stepping on any toes, trying to find out what an elected representative does for
exactly
a living.
It's not exactly clear, Mike. When
I understand
what,
that. I understand.
What's there.
I think he
has a whole list of stuff. When they ask him directly how he supported himself, he doesn't really, I don't think, my interpretation, folks, I don't think he really...
Well, that's worth mentioning. And the I saw one questionnaire where he said he was a constitutional author.
That's his pay-for-fee book. Filled with a lot of stuff. It's really not so much about constitutions. What Gary's getting at is it's about organizing for Tea Party stuff and the Tea Party
for
interpretation.
Events.
I don't see that he has an original interpretation of the Constitution. He's going with people that Austin mentions, like Glenn Beck and stuff, with this very narrow, blinkered view of what the Constitution, the founders were all about.
Can I read his previous occupations from his the bio questionnaire he answered at the legislature? It says entrepreneur, small business creator, software company, Price Waterhouse accounting firm, the Walt Disney Company, the aerospace industry, the software and online e-commerce industries, the medical industry, the construction industry, Arizona State certified volunteer firefighter, EMT, K-12 public education, and an instructor of software and robotics at UCLA Extension. He was born in 1957.
I mean, I could bill myself as a former employee of CBS News. You know, and it's true. I was. I mean, I helped work in the library managing, you know, collections, huge collections of film right before they switched to videotape. And I could say that I taught philosophy at an extension of Colorado Mountain College in Vail. All of that's true, but it doesn't, I'm sort of with you, Mike. I don't know what all of that means.
Well,
go ahead.
We're doing an in-depth on Bob Thorpe this morning, so I thought, you know, he's been married.
No,
we can say that much. And he's been a Republican for 37 years.
I think we shouldn't leave out the other two, though. We're focusing on Thorpe, but Brenda Barton and Chester Crandall are about as extreme.
Yeah. How did we get in LD6? And we usually don't do this partisan knocking stuff, but how did we get in these three people some of the most extreme legislatures in probably the history of Arizona?
Is it that LD6 only votes R's and D's and they didn't listen to a word that they said during the campaign? Or did they somehow not campaign as extreme as they legislate? I don't have an answer to that.
I think it was both. I went to some of the debates and they toned down the rhetoric for the debates, and
I see.
They tried to fill the auditorium with their own people, so they had a friendly audience. But when they spoke to their own groups, the tone was entirely different. You know, when they spoke to the Pace and Tea Party, it was very, very different. I would like to raise a question that has been puzzling me for some time. When I've looked up Brenda Barton, she apparently lives in Safford. Mm-hmm. And which is outside the LD6, but then has a cabin in Payson and uses that as her residence in order to qualify to be in LD6. I can't nail that down. I've been trying to find.
That seems to be what's happening, and that apparently is perfectly legal. You have to, in Arizona, you have to reside in the district that you represent.
And it's an Arizona tradition.
But residing
in the district, not to live where you
is, I mean, we had a congressman for in Renzi, who never lived in Arizona at all. I mean, he represented the state for what, 4 years or 6 years? I mean, he bought a house in Flagstaff. People went and checked on it, and the place was empty. He never lived in Arizona. He lived in Washington, D.C.
I guess I'm naive, but I think the people that represent a district ought to have to live in that district.
Well, if not, at least the people that vote for them should know that.
Well, maybe it helps with housing prices to have to buy a house in the district.
Soaks up the inventory, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what we're doing.
Housing. Well, no, I mean, Gary's looking really skeptical at my.
Getting back to this, I want to exclamation point this, that when you have people running on in one manner that aren't, and then legislating in another, then I think the voters of the district really ought to be made aware of that, which is what we're trying to do this morning. We believe that our LD6 representation. We're going to talk about Barton and Crandall here in a minute. We got plenty of stuff to talk about.
But I think that they're all sort of property right absolutists. In one of his formal responses, Bob Thorpe, and I think probably pretty close to the rest of them, says that as long as if you have to pay property taxes, then you don't really own land. So he's against all property tax. I guess he's all against income tax. He's only for, he calls it a consumption tax. He's only for a sales tax. And he says, well, then you get to control how much you spend.
Which, of course, impacts the poor to a much greater degree than it does people with more money.
The most regressive form of taxation.
Exactly. Some people like to believe...
That's the only tax that's acceptable to him. He said, well, you can always buy a used car and an older TV. You can get a black and white TV, folks. This is his solution.
Property tax to some of us means you have skin in the game. And you then become involved in politics and political decisions.
I understand that millions and millions of people don't own property in this country. And they're mostly concentrated not in rural Arizona, although there's a lot of people here who rent, don't really own their land, but concentrated in the cities and stuff, who have no... The property rights thing is something that appeals to people who own some property. And what they try to do is convince if you have half an acre that you have some skin in this game where people have, you know, thousands of acres.
Well, I would not mind the apartment house owner showing on his rent how much he's collecting to pay his property tax, which puts the renter, which, I mean, at least, on paper anyway, the renter, the person that doesn't own property, also has some skin in the game because his property owner is paying property tax and that property owner is letting him know how much he has to pay.
Right. And I think the thing is to reduce it, what you guys are saying, to reduce all taxation to basically a sales tax. Couldn't be more regressive, couldn't hurt people with less money, because you have to still continue. You have to have a car to go to work. People are not going to give up their television set for Bob.
Foods, clothes.
You have to buy clothes. Yeah, you can just buy cheaper and cheaper and cheaper stuff. But is that the America you want, where there's one group of wealthy people that own land and property and make large salaries, and there's other people who are getting by on Social Security, which
is the America we have, whether it's the one we want or not?
It's
I don't think there's any question it's the one we have. And that becomes more clear every day.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to Bob or Thorpe's website, he has a list of all the horrible things that Obama's done.
Well,
none of which, of course, Obama has done. The deficit, as you guys know, has been dropping. The huge deficit built up because the economy collapsed. It wasn't a huge amount of spending. The only big spending was short-term on the stimulus and to increase the size of the Veterans Affairs and Homeland Security Department. Pretty much everything else has been right. The actual number of employees has been going down. In any case, Obama's it's interesting that someone could be responsible for all of this and not even be in office yet doing anything. So, but according to Bob Thorpe, that's not a problem.
Well, one of the things that he and the other members of the Tea Party are claiming is that this administration has overregulated, business and overregulated society. Well, there was Cass Sunstein, who was the head of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs for the administration was on...
his job is to get rid of regulations that don't work.
Right. When he was on CNN yesterday, and he's since left the office, but he said that you can't ignore the facts. That the facts are there are fewer regulations under the Obama administration at this point in the administration than the Bush administration or any of the contemporary, previous administrations. And one of his big charges was from the president was to cut regulations. So the Tea Party looks at the healthcare mandate and they hate the EPA. Anything that's an environmental regulation is something they hate. But businesses have fewer regulations now than they did before.
So why does this, and the deficit is going down at a more rapid rate than probably in decades. The deficit is actually going down. I don't know if you folks have heard that. Why is so much, Mike Gary, why is so much of the Tea Party and these other far right wingers, why is it counterfactual? Why does it have nothing to do with the actual facts? It has to do with some myth or some predetermined idea, some fantasy of I don't know, in the case of racial things, of black bias against white folks, even when there's literally no evidence of it.
I wish I had an answer for you. I'm going back to the Republican mind, I think. The visceral reaction against any taxation. I mean, it's become such, in fact, maybe their last and only, as far as I'm concerned, winning issue.
But taxes have been going down, Mike.
Well, but it's a winning issue, so they're going to follow it they're going to keep following it until, don't forget, yes, we are trying to, you've heard me say before, we are running this state on primarily sales taxes, on $8.5 billion, which is nothing. It's really difficult to do all the state things on such so little money. My personal finances, when I need more money, I get a second job. I go to the revenue side. And when you deny one whole side of your ability to run your home or your state, you deny one side or you deny the revenue side, then you're screwed.
So we've talked about it before, folks. When the economy collapses and the private sector is stunned and unable to spend money because nobody has any money to buy their products, right? The government stimulates the economy and spends money, particularly when the interest rate is lowered so far that it's practically zero. And when that happens, there's nothing left for the Fed to do. And to get things going, you have stimulus. Now, we started out in a lot worse shape than the Europeans, and the Europeans followed austerity plans just like the Republicans wanted to do, and they ended up in much worse shape than we are. I mean, there's a direct correlation between the austerity stuff, which is just stop spending. But look, if the private sector stops spending and the people stop spending, what happens? It's not a single person's economy. It's all our economy. If I stop buying widgets from Gary and Gary stops buying widget repair services from Mike, the whole thing cascades and we end up in the kind of horrible recession that we had, which occurred, of course, before President Obama was even close to being elected.
I'll take a shot at your question about why they're in such denial and so antagonistic towards the president. Is that I think you have to look at there's a battle going on in the Republican Party, and we can all see that. And you have the longtime Republicans the traditional Republicans that are basically their ideology, if you will, is based on business. And
what's good for business is good for America.
What's good for
General Motors is good for
free markets, low taxes. And then you have the Tea Party wing.
Because they're the guys who benefit from free markets, supposedly, and if there is, in fact, a free market, which is another question.
And then you have the Tea Party wing that's really, as I said, refighting this whole Federalist, Articles of Confederation, battle. And then it all gets kind of wrapped up with the Southern strategy of the Republican Party that came out of the Johnson signing of the Voting Rights Act, which turned most of the racist, segregationists of the South that were traditionally Democrats, turned them into Republicans. And so you have all of these factions, these three primary factions going on in the party. And the Tea Party has kind of appealed to the racism of the former Southern Democrats.
You're not saying that all Tea Party people are racist, though. You're saying
Personally, this is just my opinion, but I do see a sense of meanness in their policies and in their attitudes towards other people.
Yeah, I think meanness in that old-fashioned sense of stinginess, emotional, psychological, economic stinginess, lack of sympathy for other people, lack of connection with other people. It's all for me. It's for me politics, you think, Gary?
I call them the I've got mine, you can't have yours crowd.
Well, we only got a few minutes left, and I wanted to kind of review here. We did talk. Our intent was to let LD6 know about as much as we could about the behavior of Robert Thorpe, a representative, and a little bit about Crandall and Brenda Barton. And there's a lot to talk about. This is August. A legislative session doesn't start until January. So prevailing wisdom is that you're going to see more ballots put on the more measures put on the ballot by the legislature as things get closer. But having this loony one yet one more time, this nullification, this attempt to regulate federal lands in the state of Arizona, when it was a condition of statehood to get the federal government be able to control its own 45 million acres at the time.
And like two-thirds of Arizona, Bob Thorpe's not even originally from Arizona. He was in California, he was a Californian.
Well, like Doug Ballard said, they're in a campaign cycle. These are people that can't even keep rest stops open, and you're going to trust them with the Grand Canyon? I mean, give me a break.
We've tried to talk a little bit about Bob Thorpe. It's not personal. It's this crazy politics, and the district has some people on the far right, and you can talk to them all the time, but do they really want this level of craziness? If they want Republicans, is this the kind of Republican, a guy who's spent his entire first term apologizing for the stuff he does, and whose sort of compadres are some of the most extreme people we've ever seen in Arizona politics. They take any American government to a level that I've barely ever seen, and I've been around a few years.
What's coming up?
Well,
I'd like to make a plug for Democrats of the Verde Valley.
Ah.
It has a meeting on Thursday evening at 6:30 at Randall's in Cottonwood and Randall's Restaurant. And has Felicia Rodolini, candidate for State Attorney General.
So this show's been political, folks, focusing on the Bob Thorpe and crew, but we have a whole series of basically non-political, non-partisan shows coming up. We're going to be talking about the wine industry changing the Verde Valley. We're going to be talking about the development of Old Town Sedona. It's been transformed. Mike knows a great deal about that.
I spent a lot of time in Old Town Sedona because mostly because of the wine industry is my big attraction there. And I don't mean, as a customer, I'm going to.
And Mike takes an old town literally.
In my case, it's true. Don't get any older than this. We have my group down at the coffee shop. We are the shadow government of the Verde Valley. I'm telling you right now, ladies and gentlemen, and if you want to know what's happening, come to our coffee shop in Old Town.
There's a conspiracy theory that you can work with. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.